Welcome to the Wise Life Podcast. My name's Dina Morris and I'm a yoga teacher and hypnotherapist here to help you get the best out of life, sharing tools, tips and tactics for powerful aging with wisdom and joy. Hello everyone and welcome to this episode of The Wise Life. I'm excited and I'll explain. In this episode I'm speaking to yoga teacher and actress Annie Hayes Pantone. Annie is a menopause education advocate serving students in and around Croydon online and travel permitting on retreat in beautiful locations. Check her out on Instagram at Let Life Be Yoga. As an actress, Annie has performed in productions as diverse as playing Lady Hamilton in A Celebration of Lord Nelson's Life and Little Voice, where she's played both the daughter and the mother roles, but not at the same time. Annie says yoga saved her life, and there's no one more passionate about its power. Enjoy.
So, Annie, welcome to the podcast. It's lovely to get you here and have a chat. I've been really keen to speak to you for a while now, and I know how busy you are. You've got loads coming up in the work that you do. I noticed you've got a yoga goddess workshop coming up, and you see you're busy with your yoga one-to-ones and your classes. So how long have you been teaching yoga now?
Okay, so it goes back to teaching. I used to teach at Nuffield Health Club. Okay. What it was, I was the studio manager there for about 18 years. And it kind of got to the stage where it was like, I'm teaching at the gym. You know, I'm teaching people who are, let's say, they're getting their yoga classes within their membership. So they saw it as something a little bit differently to how I saw yoga. So I'd been doing that for, I started teaching body balance when I was about 20.
Okay.
So yeah, we're going back years and years and years. And that kind of traveled on through into the yoga. I got my 500-hour yoga training in 2019. That's when I kind of upped my game a little bit, I think. And that's when I decided to go it alone and bring my teachings out into the world as a business owner. So I just feel that I'm now teaching people who truly want to do yoga for the reasons I want to teach yoga, you know, finding that it takes them into their life as well as on the mat. So it's not just about being in the class, so
not
to speak.
About making shapes. And...
Exactly that.
Yeah.
We do make some good shapes, I have to say.
We can find shapes. And as we know, asana is brilliant for strengthening the body, balance, helping with bone strength. And there's lots of science that backs that up. But the other limbs of yoga, if you're looking at the Ashtanga, eight limbs of yoga, you know, there's a lot more, isn't there, that yoga can offer people in their lives. And of course, it just doesn't look quite so sexy on social media. And of course, as a culture, yoga came to us, I guess, because we had that gymnastic kind of interest in the West. And so it was the easiest route in to get us as a culture interested in yoga.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is as well. And it is still where people do see it as, you know, just poses that people mm-hmm. are trying to do. And obviously, like yourself, you know, when you do your teacher training and then you just get gripped on the philosophy side of things and you delve so deeply into it. I mean, I live, breathe and sleep yoga. It's constant every day. I taught a class this morning and I'm quite led by the moon, and I don't even think it's a full moon at the moment, but this week I've just found I've been a bit out of sorts. I trapped my finger in the drawer, I banged my head, like, and then I just thought, Annie, slow down. And I literally did walk out to my little yoga den at the bottom of my garden, and I deliberately walked slowly and mindfully, and I was like, oh, that's it. And then that went into my class this morning. You know, it kind of changed the flavor of my class to what I'd planned it to be, to then what it became. You know, so the poses were what I was going to do, but the way I taught them was completely different than I thought it was going to be. And I just think that's wonderful about yoga.
I know what you mean. It's that ability to step back and witness rather than just be so consumed by everything.
Yeah, definitely.
And not even realize you're consumed by everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been teaching yoga for a long time, and yoga at some point has come knocking on your door. And I always think it's an interesting story how people find yoga, or how yoga finds them. So how did that happen for you? Because you must have got interested in yoga before you started teaching.
Yeah. One was when I was about, I can't even say when I was about, I know exactly how old I was. I was 18, and I was a very young mum, shall we say. I'd had my son, Daniel, at the age of 18, and I live in Croydon. And in South Croydon, I just literally came across this little Buddha centre. It looked like it was just a shop, and it just intrigued me. I was just walking past it one day. I think I was going to a card shop along the road. And anyway, Daniel was at school. No, he wasn't. That's not true, because I was 18. Daniel must have been in his pram. Sorry. And I just decided to go in, not knowing what I would find in there. And I remember now, because I was like, oh, sorry, I've got a pushchair. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, no worries. Anyway, and then I was looking at the Buddhas and the beautiful clothes they had in there. And I was like, God, this shop is beautiful. I love it. And the woman that worked there was like, oh, we're not just a shop. We've got a studio upstairs. We teach yoga. And I was like, oh. So actually, I wasn't that young when I found yoga, because I hadn't done it before. So I was 18. Anyway, so I signed up there and then. I was literally, yeah, I'll try a bit of this. And then, you know, obviously I didn't bring Daniel with me. His dad looked after him. And I used to go and do yoga once a week. And I just loved it. And maybe for the wrong reasons at the beginning, because I was quite flexible, I was quite strong. So I loved the shapes and the moves and the poses. And that's what I got from it then. And then when I got into my 20s, I used to teach body balance, which was kind of like the poses of yoga, but done to music. But it's completely different to yoga. Now I know it is different, but it still gave me that feeling, and it just connected with me. I just loved it. And then I realized what real yoga was and started looking into books and the philosophy. And I just got hooked on it. But the body balance is what I was teaching for a long time first. But the transition into the yoga, the teaching of the poses was kind of already there.
Mm-hmm.
All the other layers, and the taking the layers off as well, that gripped me. And I think going on a bit further, I am more than happy to admit I suffered with depression in my life, and I would hands down categorically say yoga saved my life. And I mean that. It saved my life.
You're not the first person this week, strangely enough, who has said that to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I edit a yoga magazine, and I'd been talking to somebody about writing an article for a couple of editions in the future. And he's written a piece that echoed exactly that sentiment. So I think it's it's a big truth of yoga. It really does speak to people on multi-levels, mentally, emotionally, physically, and its holistic support potential is enormous. How did that manifest for you when you say it saved your life?
Do you know what it taught me? It taught me to love myself.
Teaching you to love yourself. That's a really powerful statement. Teaching you to love yourself.
It did. And honestly, it taught me to love myself. It did. And I didn't love myself when I was growing up. Even in my adult years, I didn't love myself.
I do think we live in a culture that misses supporting us in that way.
Yeah. I remember having, I had a therapist for a little while. This is back in my 20s. And I remember her asking me she gave me homework. And it literally was, I want you to write down 10 things that you love about yourself. My immediate response was like, what? Like, what I love about myself? That's crazy. I did ask one of my friends, and I said, can you tell me something, or can you just describe me in 3 words? And one of his words, I'll never forget it, was a burden. But he was joking. He literally was. You're a burden. I admit that it is exhausting being me. I totally admit that. It's exhausting, I'm telling you now. So over the years, and that is what I teach. In my teaching of yoga, a lot of it is all to do with loving yourself. It will come up in every single class I teach, mm-hmm. is being kind to yourself. You know, I asked the ladies this morning in their Shavasana to think about 5 things they're grateful for. And then I added about yourself. and they struggled. They told me afterwards they struggled with that.
That's really like,
I was like, what do you mean? You wait. I said, because over the next few months, we're going to get to 100. And I want it to just reel off your tongue, you know. I definitely think that's my biggest what I've learned most. I was going to say biggest learning. Like, terrible grammar too. No.
But it's also what you're carrying forward in your mission, isn't it? So having learned that, the fact that you're just out there immediately then wanting to share that, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's the power of yoga.
It is the power, because then you can spread this stuff. It's like you and all the menopause work you do, which is amazing. I also teach from a place of menopause, and I know sometimes that women come to my classes and they feel rotten about themselves, and I'm like, no, do you not understand how wonderful you are? You are wonderful. And they always leave feeling uplifted, and God, if I can do that and help someone feel good about themselves, then wow. I mean, that's just, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to share that. I'm grateful for that. That's my job. Oh my God, my job is to make people feel good. Yay.
And it's highly energizing in itself, just that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And then that makes you feel good, because you just think, oh God, I've helped someone today. That's brilliant.
So your self-care routines for yourself, I'm guessing, you have a yoga practice, but are there other things that you swear by in terms of self-care?
Yep. Meeting a good friend for a cup of coffee and a cake. Like, you know, like sometimes you just need time where you just want to offload or not even offload sometimes. You just want to chat and you don't even know where it's going to go. And you might be there for your friend or they might be there for you, but you're always there for each other. And that, to me, you know, if I'm feeling a bit out of sorts or a bit, you know, I've got a few friends and my sister actually that I would just think, I need to talk to them. And I know obviously we've been in lockdown, but hey, Zoom coffee's been working for me. So that's one of the things I do. I could also, I don't know, disappear into a good old film. I'm an actress as well, so I will totally get lost in a good film or a musical. I don't have a favourite film. What happens with me is I'll see a film and I'll go, oh my God, I love that. And then I'll tell people to watch it. I don't know if it's my menopause, but then if someone then asks me in a couple of weeks' time, what was that film you watched? I'd be like, I don't know. I don't remember what it is. But I love old films. The old black and white movies with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. I love those films. I mean, I love them. They just bring me back to my childhood of probably watching those and thinking, that's what I want to be. I want to do that. So I know it is a cop-out. I can't think of one film that is my favourite film. And it changes depending on my mood, obviously. You know, sometimes I need a really funny film. So I love true stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be really sad and horrible, or they, you know, but I love a true story. Absolutely love a true story. I don't like watching films that are violent. It really upsets me. But yeah, if it's got singing in it, I'll love it.
Do you have a film that you watched and it just sort of blew your mind in a kind of, doesn't necessarily have to be a favourite, but you're just like, oh, that's just extraordinary.
Oh, I've just thought of one and I don't even know if you can get it anymore. I really loved it because I used to watch it with my brother David when I was younger, and it's called Hell's a Poppin'. Oh, it's great. It's not one that I think, oh, you'll really learn these things, right? But what it is, it's so clever. It's an old film that they're making. It's funny. They're making a film. So it's back in that day, back in the, you know, 40s or whatever. And they're making a film. And then there's just these funny clips all the way through it. But there's a storyline of the actor and the actress who are having a story out of the film, but it keeps going back into the film within the film kind of thing. And I love it. And then there's a brilliant dance scene where it's like Lindy Hop. I love Lindy Hop. So they're, you know, way back in the day doing those. But one of the, I don't know if this is going to work on podcasts, because do you have to see it to get it? But basically there's this guy in one of the scenes and he's on the phone and he's like, oh yeah, that's good. No, that's bad. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good. That's good. No, oh no, that's bad. That's bad. That's good. And his friend says, what are you doing? He says, I'm just checking out a punnet of strawberries. Sorry. But that just sticks in my mind. I saw that film when I was about, sorry if everyone's just, if that's just dropped a lead balloon, but you had to be there. It's one of those moments. But it warms my heart because I remember me and my brother watching it and just laughing our heads off at that. So now, you know, 30 years later, my brother lives in Seattle, one of them, and I could ring him up and I could literally go, oh, that's good, that's bad. And he'll just burst out laughing. You know, one of those kind of, you're just back in that moment. So that's why I love that film, because there's just little snippets. So stuff like that, that you can, or there's another one, the film The Jerk with Steve Martin. Yeah. And there's a bit in that where he's talking to, he's got a love and, he's he's in the bath and she's outside the door and he thinks she's talking to her, but she's gone off. But he's just like, oh, and I loved you. And I really miss you when I'm not with you. And like yesterday, it was like a day. And then the next day, it just felt like 3 weeks. And then the next day, oh, well, that was like 2 weeks. But then the next day, that was like one day. And it just goes on like this. It's just so daft. But me and my brother, again, could just bring out lines of the film. Like, I think being an actress as well, I remember bits of films and I could just say the script.
Have you got more than one brother or have you?
I have one sister and three brothers.
Three brothers. There's five of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are there any yogis in the family or are you the only yogi?
I'm the only yogi in the family. The only one. My sister comes to my yoga. I have to give her that. And she's doing really well. I nearly scared her off at the beginning because I teach quite a strong practice. And she was like, oh, my God. And she admitted at the beginning she used to look at the clock about 45 minutes in thinking, oh, my God, is there any more? Because I'm quite, you know, it's quite strong. But now she's there, you know. And I always tell people, you know, yoga practice. It's not, there's no end product. We're practicing, you know, it's practice.
And it's all in the journey. So yeah, yoga is a practice. It's not a destination. Yeah.
This, where yoga helped me as well. Okay, so here's a good example. It's just come to my mind. Being an actress, obviously, you go for auditions and you really, really have your mind on the goal. You know, that part, I want that part. I mean, that part is just me and I have to have it. And it just, you put so much into it and you are setting yourself up possibly for a big fall. Because that's the nature of the beast. That's acting. There's lots of people who want that part. And I think what I learned from yoga, because I remember once, well, on one of my courses, we had to write down what was your Arjuna moment. And my Arjuna moment was realizing that when I go for a part and I don't get it, one, clearly they picked the wrong person, but you know, what I really got from it was, if I don't get that part, that's okay, because it doesn't say anything about me. It just meant they already knew what they wanted and they didn't see what they wanted, but that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with me. And I think maybe all actors should do yoga for that, just to give you that real belief that, you know what, it isn't about you. And also what it taught me was, you know, that the layers that we put on ourselves, like, oh, my God, as soon as I've got that pair of shoes, oh, well, then I'm made up like that. That is what I want. And then you get the shoes and then it's like, oh, yeah, but if, oh, my God, if I could just have that dress. You know, and that was the same with parts. Oh, yeah, but if I could, oh, God, if I could have that part, then people would see me and see how brilliant I am at acting. And then, oh, my God, they'd think I was wonderful. So even with my acting, with my kind of lack of self-love, it was the acting that I wanted people to see, because then they would see how great I was.
Rather than you knowing how great you were.
How great I am. And yeah, I am a good actress. I am. But it is me. But do you know what I mean? It's really hard to, I'm not any less a person because I go for a part and I don't get it. So it kind of taught me, do you know what, Dina? I used to not go for parts because not going for it meant I never had to tell someone I didn't get it. Because I didn't go for it. Yeah. Whereas now I'm at the stage, and maybe it's not just yoga. Maybe it's just the fact that I'm 53 and I'm a woman And that says it all, doesn't it? We know what we want. We get older and it's like, nah, of course this is what I want. You know, I don't need all of that. But I, you know, yoga did teach me that too.
I think you get to a point where you realize it doesn't really matter how many pairs of shoes you own.
Exactly.
You can only wear one pair of shoes at a time.
Yes, exactly.
You buy and stuff you own does not do anything other than take up space and require dusting.
Mm. And when I was at school, and you know, they'd always say, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And like, I'm going to be an actress. No, but Annie, what else? No, there is no other else. I'm going to be an actress. No, Annie, you need to have, I don't need to have anything. And I was so stubborn. I was a stubborn little girl. I've just grown up into a stubborn little girl. No, I'm not so stubborn anymore. But that is all I want. I do have this thing where I know I have a lot of passion. And I have to say that that's the other thing about yoga, is I never believed I would ever find a job that would give me the same passion as acting, because acting was everything to me, everything. And now yoga is on a par.
For you were at school. I mean, like so many people I know had no idea what they wanted to do. And I was in similar position. I knew I wanted to write and nothing else was going to measure up. And I knew I wanted to work in newspapers. I applied for journalism college. If I'd known how competitive it was to get in, I probably would never have applied. It just didn't occur to me how hard it was to get in. So you had to do an exam to get an interview, and then you had to pass so many A levels to get on the course, and then you had to pass the interview as well. And it was only after we started that they told us how few people who applied actually got in. And I was like, oh, it's extraordinary. But when you've got that youthful, this is who I am, this is what I want to be, you're unstoppable, aren't you?
Yeah.
So were you straight out of school applying for acting jobs? Did you go to drama school?
No. Well, yes, I did. But what happened was, to be honest, my mum and dad didn't really have a lot of money, so they didn't have the money to send me to drama school. I used to go to a Saturday morning, you know, drama thing. And I did get an audition once for Bugsy Malone on stage.
In the West End.
Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees was, and I was on the stage. I never forget it, because he was like, hey Annie, where's your tap shoes? And I was like, oh, they're in my bag. They weren't in my bag. I didn't have any, because my mum and dad couldn't afford them, you know. And he was like, hey Annie, where's your t-shirt, as in the emblem of the dance of the school. And I was like, oh, that's in my bag too. But you know, and I didn't get in it, but I had this big long chat with Mickey Dolenz, and that's, you know, that was great. And then what I did do was I started doing a lot of amateur dramatics, actually. But, and don't get me wrong, I had great fun and I played some great parts because of that. And then I think it irritated me a little bit, because there were too many people that really did do it as a hobby, which it shouldn't have irritated me, because that's what AmDram's about. But because I was so passionate about it, it was like, why have you come this week and you don't know it? Like, we learned this last week. Why do we have to do it all again? Because you haven't all gone on, you know, I knew it. I was there. Like, anyway. So, and then one day I was playing Annie in Annie Get Your Gun at Fairfield Tours in Croydon. And then I got a phone call from a director called Robin Sheringham, and he was directing The Boyfriend in the Canazara Park Open Air Theatre in Wimbledon. And he just asked me, Annie, would you be Maisie? And I was like, oh, when's the audition? And he went, no, I just want you to play the part. So it was like, what? So I did. And June Whitman, Whitfield was in the front row. I love her. I know. The only bad thing about doing it was because it was in the open air. Oh, my God. Even though I had proper, you know, thick tights on or whatever you wore, the gnat bites I got, they got in my tights. Honestly, I literally had a dot to dot on my legs from the gnat bites. Oh, my God. But that was just wonderful. Just wonderful. And then jumping on a lot of years, otherwise we'll be here all day. Don't want to bore your listeners, but I did go to drama college when I was 40. I went back to train some more and I did classic training. So, you know, the Shakespeare and all the classical works and everything. And I did that in Hoxton.
We have this like idea that learning should be linear, don't we? You know, you go to primary school, then you go to secondary school, then you do this, then you do that. But there's no rules. You can make your own rules. You can come back and study whenever you want to.
So I did. I did a year. I did a year of the course, and I absolutely loved it. I loved it. And it was a real big mixture of ages as well. The youngest, I think, was about 24. And the oldest was about 74. Yeah, it was amazing. And I learned so much. I learned so much. So that was wonderful. And then when I came out of there, it was the anniversary of Nelson. And I landed a part at the, in Old Street, no, I didn't, it's not in Old Street, where is it? German Street, in Piccadilly. And I played Lady Hamilton. It was Nelson's sordid affair. And because I'm only little, 5'2", and not very big, I had to wear a fat suit because she was a big, voluptuous woman. So, oh my God. And actually somebody came to see me who hadn't seen me for a long time. And when I came out afterwards, he was like, oh my God, Annie, thank God for that. I thought you'd put on loads of weight. So it's all brilliant. It looked real then. I was actually really relieved because I must be honest. I remember when I got the part, they said, and it says it in the script, that the first scene is she's kind of partially naked on the bed. And that would be the opening scene in the play. And it was like, well, you're not going to have me on the bed partially naked in this foam fat suit. So I hope this is politically correct to say this, but this is what it was. I mean, you know, this is... I'm not being mean here. It literally was. I needed it to look like the part.
That's what they're called, though, isn't it?
They are. So sorry, I'm not saying that in any other way than other than that is what it is called. So I apologise. I don't mean to offend anybody ever. Sweaty is an understatement. Sorry, that's quite gross. But yeah, sweaty is all I can say.
So was that your favourite part that you ever played, or do you have a particular favourite?
I have a favourite part. My favourite part to date, I think, is when I played Audrey in Little Shop of Horrors. And I loved it. You're right, I haven't got one favourite, I've got a few. But say my top three. The other one, which I loved, and I was lucky enough a couple of years ago to play a part alongside it, which I'll explain. I was in the play version of Little Voice. And I don't know if you know the first plays are in the film, and she does all these voices because basically she's always in her bedroom. She's a bit of a recluse. Her mother is a nightmare, like alcoholic, always got men back and all that kind of stuff. And a little voice. Caine. And then say that again.
Michael Caine in the film.
Yes, Michael Caine in it. And so Michael Caine hears her singing when he's around on, you know, rolling about with her mother on the sofa, overhears her, thinks it's the real Judy Garland singing and realizes. So anyway, in the play, there's a scene where I had to do Judy Garland, Shirley Bassey, Edith Piaf. I even went to a French lady's house and she taught me to sing an Edith Piaf song in French. And oh, lots of people. Anyway, so I played that. That was, I absolutely loved it. Then a few years ago, I played Little Voice's mother.
Oh, really?
Same play. Yeah. So I got to play the little timid, quiet girl in the bedroom to the brash. Oh my God, she was brash.
Rolling about on the sofa with my.
Rolling about on the sofa. Yeah. And actually, when I got the part, I had recently got married and it was like I had to tell my husband that I would be rolling about on the sofa with someone else. And he was like, that's okay, it's work. Like, okay, thanks. Like, you know, because, you know, you do think, oh God, I hope you're all right with this. Yeah. But yeah,
brilliant.
Wonderful. It was wonderful. So yes, I've still got that passion. And I think that comes through in my yoga as well. Because, you know, we have a laugh and I don't know, maybe, am I a bit crazy? Yeah, I think I'm a little bit crazy. So it comes across in my yoga practice. We have fun. That's what we have.
That's very important, isn't it? I think people get this idea that yoga is very, very serious.
I know.
Yoga teachers are. And that's fine if that's what you're looking for, but not yoga teachers are not made in a sausage factory. They are very, very, even a vegan sausage factory. They are all very, very different.
Absolutely.
Meat anyway. Well, that's such a varied career. What I wanted to ask you, Annie, I mean, like, you've got these two really powerful strands going on in your career, but I can see exactly how they cross over and feed each other. Looking back, knowing what you know now, as you've said, as a, you know, menopause stroke postmenopausal woman, what advice would you give little Annie from back at school, who clearly had that strength of character to know that she wanted to be a yoga teacher, but obviously has not a yoga teacher, who clearly had that vision of wanting to be a wanted to be an actress, but doesn't have the benefit of hindsight that you have now. So looking back, what advice, if you could get hold of her and give her some advice, what would you tell her?
Trust your gut. Like, dig in deep and trust your gut. Because don't you think, Dina, that you always know. You know. So that thing of, you know, like when you question yourself, I think I would tell little Annie, don't question yourself. You know what you want. You know what you want. And don't let people try and put you off by telling you you're wrong. I would also tell little Annie that it's essential to love yourself. It's not vanity. It's essential to love yourself and keep telling yourself how wonderful you are. So I would tell her that. Yeah, I think loving yourself has got a lot to answer for, because I think, you know, I was always, believe it or not, I know I'm quite outgoing. Don't get me wrong, I can talk to anyone. I could go in a room and talk to a stranger, probably more than I should. But I definitely had huge insecurities. And if I said to anyone, I'm actually really insecure, they'd be like, yeah, right. Because I give off this aura of nothing fazes me and I'm so confident. It's not true. It's not actually true. I'm not so confident, and I definitely struggled, and it ruined relationships. You know, I struggled in relationships because I was always insecure, always wondered what they were doing when I wasn't there, you know, tried to get them to love me and blah, blah, blah. And I guess I'd tell her that, you know, no one can make you feel your worth. Nobody can except yourself. So I think I would tell her that.
I guess that's the double-edged of the sword of being an actress, isn't it? In that you can present a self that isn't authentic, but feels very authentic to other people. So you can pretend to be super.
And you know what? It's not even a way of, I never put it on and knew that I was. Do you see what I mean? I don't go out and pretend to be something I'm not. I'm absolutely totally not authentic, and totally what you see is what you get. But there's definitely that little thing in there that is, oh, little old me. Do you know what I mean? I'm confident enough to talk to everybody. Like I say, it's like it's not that. It's the lack of love. It is definitely. It's that. It's knowing your worth. You know, we're all worthy of having, you know, we're all the same. We are all the same. We all deserve to be happy. So I'll tell her that too. You deserve to be happy. There isn't, you know, I don't believe that anyone doesn't deserve to be happy. And it's taken me a long time. A long time. Oh, and the other thing I would tell little Annie is all about the menopause. Seriously, because how the hell do you get to the age of 40? Perimenopause, what? Like, what the hell was that all about? I didn't even know about that. I mean, now I do, because I've done so much research on it, and I try and help other women just like you do, and I love it. But when it hit me, I remember going for a coffee with my sister, and she literally sat in front of me, and I'm a few years younger than my sister. And, you know, before my eyes, she just like changed color into the Oompa Loompas. And it's just like, what's going on? She went, oh, it's just a hot flush. It's like, what's that? What do you mean? I didn't know that I was going to get them too. I just thought it was something she had. It's like, oh, did you get that? That's weird. What's that? That if we went to the doctors, you know, it's like, oh, we all do. You know, it's like, I genuinely think that the menopause and the perimenopause should be taught to women when they're at school.
I think everybody needs to understand what it is. Yeah. So understand what's happening within your family dynamic and what your sisters all go through and your partner will experience.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Anyone who lives with the menopause, everyone, isn't it? Because, you know, when you go back, when you think back, you know, and you might think about how your mum reacted to you, you don't know what she was going through. And back then, did they, you know, what did they even think was going on then?
I remember my mum's entire sort of education, and my mum was like brilliant on menstruation and pregnancy. You know, she sat me down and talked me through how babies are made very young. I was at primary school and I knew all about reproduction. Yeah, she was absolutely sure I was, you know, going to be clued up. I even had a book called How a Baby is Made with this little cartoon couple that drove a 2CV and loved each other very much. But menopause, all she said to me was, well, Dina, and then I looked in the airing cupboard and I realised I hadn't used a tampon for 18 months. Well, that must be me then. But that is my mum all over, you know. And so I assumed, right, menopause, you know, meno means blood, pause means stop.
Yeah.
That's all that's going to happen. I knew something about hot flushes because I'd worked with other women who'd complained about getting hot. But all sorts of stuff was happening for me emotionally. And I remember an episode of crying in the toilets at work with my head resting against the wall, thinking, I can't do this. And somebody saying, are you all right? And I said, it's like being premenstrual, but it just never, ever ends.
Oh, it's,
you know, it was like premenstrual tension forever. But even then, I didn't marry up what was happening with me and the fact that the way I was feeling might be due to the fact that my hormones were changing. Just didn't make that connection. And even when I went to talk to the GP about what was going on with me, she didn't look at me and go like, Gina, you are 50. Let's have a look here. What do you think? Could it be menopause? You know, she just
went, yes.
Do you think you might be depressed?
Oh, that's what they always say, isn't it? I mean,
can't stop crying. Think that might be something to do with it.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what my doc said? I think, I'll tell you something really good for the menopause is yoga. It's like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I said, I teach it. Now give me something else I can do. Because I know yoga is really good for the menopause. I teach that. But the one thing yoga doesn't do is stop me putting the milk in the fridge by accident. And
it's
stop
in the fridge though, darling.
I'm sorry, the kettle in the fridge. I put the kettle in the fridge. Yeah, it also doesn't stop me having a foggy brain and not knowing.
I'm talking about brain fog here. Yeah.
There's brain fog for you. Like, for God's sake. I literally, honestly.
I'm laughing at myself.
I put the kettle in the fridge instead of the milk is what I meant to say. And one day I went to work and I had the remote control in my handbag. I thought it was my phone. Like, what the hell is that all about? Like, seriously, you know, same shape, you know, it's got buttons. Oh God. Yeah.
It's a lesson in mindfulness, isn't it? I'll give it that.
Oh God, yeah. Oh God, yeah. And that is what you get from yoga. And obviously, you know, the breathing techniques you get from yoga. Oh, that helps through my night sweats, the anxiety, mindfulness, breathing, you know, it helped me. I mean, when I say get through, I haven't come out the other side yet. Like, I'm still in it, but I'm through the perimenopause. I know that much. But, you know, even that perimenopause, you think, oh, it's not going to be as bad as the menopause. What? It is. It's, you know, it's
just 1 year without your period. And exactly. Then everything after that is post-menopause. And yeah. I would also say that, again, we assume that it will be like some kind of step process where, you know, you, like a swimming pool, you step out of the shallow end into the medium pool and then you step into the deep end and you sort of go, poof. It doesn't work like that.
No.
It's more of a kind of drifting along, and it's a bit like a kind of wave motion where you'll feel yourself flowing back and then you'll move forward again. So it's more like the waxing and the waning of the moon.
Yes.
Hurtling along a motorway at 70 miles an hour, I would say.
But sometimes that nice relaxing wave that you described is like a massive storm.
Oh, yeah.
Waves are 6 foot high or 160 foot high, or, you know, or sometimes it might be calm. And the tears, literally, like the tears. I did put out on my Instagram this little video of me hysterically crying and then, sorry, laughing and then getting my words muddled up because of the brain fog, said it all wrong, made me laugh some more. But then it's literally like, yeah, but do you know what? I could be crying in a minute because that, you know, you literally just, your emotions are crazy. And, you know, I've got some funny, funny stories about the menopause, but I asked my husband, I said, hon, can you tell me, like, can you think of like some funny stories that, because I was writing my podcast episodes and so can you think of some funny stories about my menopause? And he said, funny? It's not funny. It's just bloody annoying. it's like, are you serious? I was like, right, that's going in. That you said that. Oh, my God. But do you find as well, like, that's the one thing I won't do. I'll give people advice about the menopause, but I'd never try to push them one way or the other about HRT. I don't think I'm in a position. Do you agree? Like, it's
absolutely.
Yeah.
All I would say to women, and all I find myself saying to my friends and the sisters that they come to see me and ask about, yeah, is try and put your emotions to one side. Try not to take on what other people advise you to do. This is a personal choice for you, but it should be a choice that comes from who you are versus the knowledge and the research that will inform that choice.
Yes.
So go and get yourself as much knowledge and up-to-date information as you can from reliable sources where people are not invested in selling you something that hasn't necessarily been tested on people, but might have been made in somebody's shed.
Yeah.
So you have women saying that they don't want to take HRT, but they are. I read things on Instagram, and you know, you read things, you're like, oh, I can imagine what led to that choice, and it wasn't making an value judgment from a place of informed knowledge. Don't put anything in your body that you don't know has been tested. Just because it's got natural written on it doesn't mean.
Oh, of course.
And what does natural mean anyway? You know, what natural means to me may not be what natural means to the person, yes, who made that in their kitchen, not necessarily with surgical gloves on. You don't know what's in it. At least something that's been tested in a lab has been tested in a lab and is consistent in the way that it's made. But some people are quite happy to put things in their body that they don't know the efficacy of where it's come from. And that's fine. But you should be making a choice that's informed, not led by reading the word natural on the label and thinking, oh, well, that's going to be good.
That's all right then.
So, yeah, that I point people to Louise Newson's website, who's the menopause doctor and was the doctor in the Davina McCall documentary.
She's wonderful. She's been on so many, you know, this morning, and, you know, I've seen her on so many programs. She's
very busy. I came across her, stood in a clothes shop in Lewes in East Sussex, talking to the owner who just left her husband and felt exhausted. And her friend came out of the changing room having tried on this shirt. And she was like, you look amazing. And I was like, you are glowing. And she was like, oh, what do you think? You know, she had like these pneumatic breasts, beautiful hair, red lipstick, absolutely radiant. And she went, oh, I've been to see this menopause doctor in Stratford-upon-Avon. Now, I'm from Banbury in Oxfordshire. So I was like, oh, I know Stratford, interested. And she carried on about how she'd been having a hard time with her menopause. And she just got to the, and she said, I couldn't, there's a menopause nurse in Brighton, but you can't get an appointment. It's ridiculous. So I just thought, I need to do this. And she said, and it's changed my life. So I said, oh, interesting. Yeah. So I'd looked up Louise Newson. And then, because I edit the yoga magazine for the British Wheel,
yep,
the woman who developed the menopause yoga teacher training that I did, the course was developed with Louise Newson.
Oh, wow.
I thought, if Louise Newson is behind this, it's going to be the dogs.
Absolutely.
So I rang up Petra, and you were saying about intuitive calling. I've seen the course, I want to feature it, but I want to do the course. And she was like, well, we're doing like a retreat in March. I was like, no, I need to do it now. And she said, well, the next one's in February. And I said, right, I'll wire you the money today. Because, you know, you hear your intuition going.
Oh, absolutely. And it's just got to be that one.
Yeah. So I would wholeheartedly agree. If there's one thing you can try and learn as you grow, it's hear your intuition. And I spend a lot of time in the yoga that I teach helping women feel emotion in their body.
That's the thing, isn't it? You know, it's the
trust in it.
How do you feel? That's it, isn't it?
I did a podcast an episode or two ago about Cinderella versus Vasilisa as two characters in children's storytelling. Mm. Cinderella is the one we got in the West, and Vasilisa is the one that little girls got in Russia and Slavic countries.
Oh, wow.
Vasilisa has intuition. It's represented as a little doll that she carries with her everywhere. And intuition bounces up and down and says,
oh my God, that's amazing.
So good. Yeah. Yeah. So do listen.
Oh, I will do.
It's not that long because I can talk for Britain with other people as we have done today. We must wrap up soon. But on my own, yeah. Mini-sodes, definitely.
Yeah.
So on the spirit of wrapping up, I realise I haven't asked you about your go-to books, the ones that you would take with you to a desert island.
Okay, so this is really hard for me too, because believe it or not, I don't know what it is about me. I've never been, well, I do. I know one thing. I know lots about me, but I don't know. I wouldn't call myself a reader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm dyslexic and it takes me a long time to read a book. And I think that always put me off reading. But I used to, reading scripts all day long. Like I love reading scripts and it's almost like I'll read a play and I've directed it in my head. I know how I would do this and this would happen. And I just love that creativeness of reading scripts, even if it's nothing to do with anything I'm doing. I just like to read scripts and put my twist on it. And how would I play that part? And you know, what part would I do? Could I do all of them? How would I play that one? So I kind of do that with books. And then my other style of books is the kind of books that I used to think in my 20s I had to hide, self-help books. Now they have a prominent place and I love them. So I, going back to years ago, I read Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life.
She's a classic.
She is a classic, that woman. She's amazing. She went through so much. So that's going back. The books, obviously, whoever you train with, on yoga courses, the Jivamukti yoga book I love, and I also read a book at the moment. Well, it's not at the moment, it's every day one page, and it's called, I know I'm showing it to you but no one else can see it, but I'm going to show it to you. There you go. It's called Simple Abundance: A Day Book of Comfort and Joy. And it's it's Sarah Ban Breathnach. Breath and then NACH.
Brilliant. Well, as you know, I generally do a little post with book recommends on it as well.
Oh, I recommend this. It basically, you open you can see how it's fallen apart, because I love books that have fallen apart. They're well read, aren't they? But yeah, literally, you know, February the 3rd, and it will just, but it gives you, it's all about finding your authentic self. And it takes you from a journey from the 1st of January through to the end of the year. And each month it kind of gives a little bit of a recap over that month, but it takes you through the seasons. It gives you things to do, like, you know, looking in a mirror and, you know, noticing what do you really see and all this kind of stuff. So there's some stuff to do as well. And that the other, I'd like to give you another book to get. I love this book by Glennon Doyle.
Untamed.
Untamed. I love this woman. Glennon Doyle, I love you. Untamed. Come on, women, get out there, get this book. I'm not getting any money for this. Get this book. I love this book.
I've got the audio version.
I'll have you. Does she read it? Is it? Oh, right, I'll have to get that too.
It is so good. Yeah. Yeah, she's so funny.
She's brilliant. She's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Do you know what? If I was talking to little Annie, I would kind of tell little Annie all the things that she says in this book. So now everyone's got to read it. She's wonderful, isn't she?
Yeah. I mean, Untamed just wasn't there in the 70s, was it? I think with the best.
And just teaches you the, like, I don't know, would you say the mistakes maybe of, I don't know, how we are boxed. We're, you know, as in, you know, we're put in a cage and we're told that we should be this and we should be that. And
well, we comply.
We comply. One word that I do not use is the word should.
Yeah.
I deleted it from my vocabulary.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. That's a word that, what's that all about? What's that? You're telling yourself off already as soon as you use it, aren't you? I should have done that.
Yourself, definitely.
Like, that's totally, that's, and I, you know, if I know them well enough, I'll be like, don't say that. Can you put it in a different way? Let's find a positive spin on this.
It's definitely a judgment, isn't it? Even if you say it to yourself, I should do this and I should do
that. Oh my God, you're totally. That's just putting yourself down, isn't it? Mm. Why should you have done that? I could have done it, or it would have been nice if I did, maybe, or, you know, but not should.
Because we're all generally doing the best that we can in the context that we have.
Yeah, we can only do what we know.
Exactly.
Then we learn, and then we do something a bit different, and we go, oh yeah, I like this.
And move forward, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
Annie, that's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, my God.
Catching up with you again very soon, I'm sure. And I'll see you soon.
Take care, Dina.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
And here we are at the end of another edition of the Wise Life podcast. If you found this content useful, I would be very grateful if you could support this podcast by giving me a 5-star rating. And if you've got the time, a review would be amazing. And please, if you have suggestions for podcast topics, I'd love to hear them. Just DM me on Instagram @dina.morris and have a great week.